and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. I am joined today by none other than Ahmad Hawkins, the Ball Hawk. You know him, you heard him this weekend probably. His first game up there, and the lead analyst for UVA Radio, calling the game this weekend. You also can hear him on the Believe in Virginia podcast. A lot of stuff where you can hear him. But real quick, just to plug the podcast here, again, you can find this on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Also on the Saber.com, a lot of good content on the Saber.com. Following the first game of the season against Richmond, just got up my latest article on Kobe Pace and some explosive plays from the UVA offense. You can also find the game recap, pictures from Chris Wright, as well as a lot of other stuff. And the message board, as always, is popping on there. I see the Ball Hawk on there from time to time. Ahmad, just what was your feeling after that very, very long Saturday?
I was relieved that we won because it was just a long day. First game of the year, then you have a rain delay. But it was refreshing just to see the team out, see the hill pack, just seeing all the fans there, man. It was just happy that football. I was just happy football was back.
I think that's kind of sums it up. Just happy that we're talking about games now. You know, there's no more fall camp. There's no more off season. We're in the thick of it now. First game of the season. But first game for you in the booth, just kind of what was that like? I know y'all have done some read-throughs and gone through some practices leading up to it, but just kind of that first game up there, you, John Freeman, of course, and Matt Schaub also in the booth with you for a couple games this year.
Yeah, man, it was exciting. I mean, it felt like I was getting ready for a game again, so I had that nervous energy. just trying to make sure that I enunciate, speak clearly, and say what fans wanted to hear as far as, like, the information. And being patient because you don't want to cut John off. You don't want to jump in all the time and not let Matt speak. So, you know, just trying to read the cues and just put on a great show. And hopefully we did. And then the fact it was a rain delay, man, it's like, yo, this is a way to kick off my career.
I was going to ask, what was that delay like for you guys? I saw John walking through the box a couple times, just trying to figure out what y'all were going to do to pass time. What'd y'all do for those 2+ hours?
Man, we told a couple of stories. Like, he asked me about the Poindexter story for Tech. He asked Matt about any fun stories. So he told it to Brickashaw Ferguson when he first met the Brickashaw here on campus, how the Brickashaw was like 210 pounds, but he was supposed to be in the left tackle, and how he just wowed everybody. So just trying to find different things just to converse about and just keep the energy going and keep people encouraged to stay tuned that the team was returning. And John did a good job just interviewing different folks. So yeah, it was tough, but it was fun at the same time.
I mean, I think you carried that energy well. I mean, even when you walked out and I saw you kind of in the press box, you had that smile on your face. You're still going. You had the energy throughout, the same as always. Talking about the energy though, just kind of your thoughts on the game day experience. I know the people at UVA made a lot of improvements or tried to make a ton of improvements. Obviously, I think the biggest thing that stands out is the scoreboard. Just kind of what was your view of seeing that in action for the first time? I know you're glued in on the game, but it's, you know, that big, you can't really ignore it.
Yeah. That scoreboard right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. We got a chance to see it the first scrimmage, and I got a chance to hear it. I was like, all right, I know our fans, you know, when Jamar's talking into the mic, went to the Jumbotron when I used to do the highlights and stuff, I know it was an echo. They really couldn't hear us clear. I was like, they may tell Jamar not to talk so loud now because it's crystal clear. It's beautiful, man. And they did a great job. Eric's doing a great job. Eric Ward's doing a great job of just – it's like they pay attention to message boards and things of that nature. And that's what you want. Like, if fans are speaking out and they want you to improve, like, don't take it personal. Hold yourself accountable and see if you can, you know, accommodate them. And I felt like that experience yesterday, and then Cav, man, that was dope just to see, you know, they call it the ride now. But just to see that, you know, because fans have been saying, hey, we want the Cav man to return on a big screen. And then they did that.
It does really seem like they kind of pay attention to what fans have been saying. And obviously you can't do everything that a fan would want, but you know, it seems like, you know, when they sent out that initial list of everything, I was going through there. I was like, oh yeah, that's something I saw someone say on Twitter one time, or, oh yeah, that's something I saw on the message board. And then I got down to the food and I was like, well, finally, like they needed some more options out there. You know, I've only been a handful of times in like the last, you know, decade as a fan, you know, because obviously covering games now, but you know, the few times I went with my family or whatever, it was like, all right, do I want a hot dog or do I want, like, you know, a pretzel or something? It was, you know, pretty basic. So it's nice to see they had some new stuff. Speaking of the ride, or, you know, the brand new Adventures of Cavman, had you seen it before? I saw it in pregame warmups before they showed it to everyone, and I was like, this looks like a really nice blend, because I grew up on, you know, the old Adventures of Cavman, which, you know, probably a little dated at this point, so yeah, it needed a revamp. And I kind of like that it was, you know, everyone's so into, you know, the Marvel now. And I was talking to Jackie Franchulli down on the field before the game. I was like, it kind of reminded me of like anime. And I was like, you know, half the guys on this football team right here, they love like anime and stuff like that. So it kind of seemed like it had that kind of updated twist on it. What did you think of it as a whole?
Yeah, I thought it was dope. I thought it was fun. It was refreshing because it's blended the old with the new. And that's what you just want to do, man. You want to make sure you pay homage to the folks that saw the original, like when I was playing. And then, you know, you have a new era of fans that's younger. So you want to garner their attention as well, because consumers are on both ends of the spectrum. I thought they did a fantastic job with that. And it was fun to watch. I hadn't seen it. So when we were upstairs and we were doing a pregame and we're getting ready for the game, and I'm expecting like the team to come to the tunnel. Yeah. And I hear something on a Jumbotron. And I look, and you know where we're at, since the Jumbotron's so big and taller, we got to duck down to see what's going on. So I ducked down. I was like, yo, Matt, they brought Catman back. He was like, what? And I was like, wait a minute. That's like a Spider-Verse type of Catman.
It did remind me a lot of the Spider-Verse. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, that's dope. And then to see she came out by herself with on Saber, and then waited, and then the team came out with the pyros, and the, you know, just understanding that they want that energy, so that's to accommodate Saber. So she won't, you know, the horse won't do anything to our rider, and then because people want me to ride the horse, and you want to see somebody fall, I'll fall, you know.
We've been calling for years, you know.
Yeah, Bronco told me how to ride the horse, but not that good. So y'all got a great individual on Saber.
Yeah, especially not coming out of a tunnel with all the people around. We might need to clear the field before we let him on right out of the horse.
You know what I'm saying? I'm on a motorized scooter.
I don't know about you. I couldn't resist just poking a little bit of fun at, you know, we had a great turnout on the hill with all the students. I couldn't resist poking a little fun at, you know, EA, the new college football game. And because that first there was no one on the hill. Now they've got people wearing Virginia Tech shirts on the hill. I couldn't resist it, but what do you think about that? Do you play the game? I haven't gotten the game yet. Okay. I don't have a PS5. I'm still on the old PS4. I'm waiting to update. So that's why I don't have the game yet. Otherwise I'd be on it way too often.
Yeah. I played and I saw the update, and my first game playing it with the update, I went back through my dynasty. My first home game, it was just seats on the hill. I was like, yo, they punking us. Like, they really punking us. Like, you won 3 games last year. Shut up. Take what we give you. So that's how I feel like they treating us right now. So it's like, all right. And then I started thinking, like, maybe they came to the Tech and JMU game. And they like, this is what we saw. It's like, you know what? Again, y'all punking us right now.
I was thinking about that, but I was like, there's no way that, you know, Virginia sent, like, oh, here's like what the hill looks like with the Virginia Tech picture there.
No, that's no way. And I talked to Tyler. He was like, man, I know he firsthand's been calling EA, but he made a great point. He said, maybe, you know, he just thinking that as far as updates and what they're doing to the stadium, they might be just waiting to put that energy into next year's game.
And I'm sure Virginia is not the only one. It's just the only one we hear about because, you know, that's the fans that we hear on Twitter chirping. And
that's the ones in our algorithm.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. So I'm sure there's other schools out there that have, you know, something wrong or whatever. All right. That's kind of real quick, just kind of the energy that we felt with that quick start out there, just this stat kind of blew me away because Virginia's been playing football for a long time. And I know you played a long time ago, but they've been playing longer than that. First time in 135 years of Virginia football that the first pass of the season goes for a touchdown, that Anthony Calandre to Trell Harris 35-yard touchdown. I just kind of, when that happened, what were you feeling as that game really got just started to get going?
Man, I was hyped just because I've been bragging about Trell Harris and what I expect him to bring to the table. And when he scored, the first thing I said when he caught the ball, I was like, you can't say nothing yet because John has to get through the sound bite. Like, that's, you know, they want that. And if I say something, we ain't going to be able to use it in my first touchdown as a lead analyst. So it was him. And I was like, and I'm just looking at John like, when can I talk? And John saw me and he realized what I was waiting on. And as soon as he finished, he just pointed at me and I just went crazy. Like, that's Trell.
Like, I told you.
Yeah, man. I was like, I told folks. And I forgot, you know, I was going to say welcome to Trellville, but I was like, I'm going to wait on that, you know, because
you got 11 more games. Yeah.
Yeah, I got 11 more games, man. I call it Trellville because I expect him to be in the end zone. But just the, and I understand. Well, I don't understand. Like, when John dropped that stat, I was like, dang, we never had a first touchdown go for it. I mean, a first pass touchdown. Like, but we always ran student body left, student body right. So it makes sense. Even in the Nas era, where he was offensive coordinator, he throwing the ball around a lot. But well, I understand.
It's the first pass of the season. Because in 2018, when they had that weird game against Ohio in Nashville, Bryce Perkins to Olamide Zaccheaus for that long touchdown. That was the first pass of the game, but the first one of the season. That was, that's the differentiator here.
True.
And that one's always kind of stuck in my head. I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, and Matt Ryan's first pass of his career went for a touchdown. And so I've always thought about that stat and I was like, oh man, that's even crazier. 135 years, like, never happened before. So, pretty crazy, but I'm gonna cut us off right there. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about kind of the offense, defense, what we thought about them in this opening game, and we'll go from there. But we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. Of course, my guest still the Ball Hawk, Ahmad Hawkins here, lead analyst for the UVA radio team, here to join me talking about the offense now. And I put out a Who's On podcast player of the game. I'll try to do that every game. Maybe not if they lose, just because you probably won't get the same participation or excitement about a performance. But the clear runaway for the Who's On podcast player of the game was Anthony Calandre, QB1 in his first game. And let me tell you, I saw him come off the bus, and I have never seen someone just kind of, he's got the briefcase, had that face on. He was just walking down the Wahoo Walk, gave a couple high fives, you know, kissed his mom and kept walking down. Looked business ready, and he played like that on that first drive. Just looking at his stats for the whole game, 17 for 23, 297 yards, two touchdowns through the air, 11 carries, 49 yards on the ground, and a touchdown, his first career rushing touchdown. Ahmad, just looking at his performance as a whole, I guess initial thoughts and takeaways from his first game this season?
I thought he played great, man. I thought he played as well as you could being your first start in your second year, but getting the news a week before the game that you'll be the starter, knowing the expectations, knowing you're supposed to be Mr. Electric and change the dynamic of the way that we're playing football offensively and playing within the cell. I love that Coach Dez Kitchen called his number the first play of the game with the quarterback draw, because that helps get the jitters out. And I said on my podcast, I thought he did a phenomenal job of trusting the play call, running behind Kobe, and then letting his spider senses take over. And he cut back against the grain. And in the process of breaking for that 35-yarder, he went out of bounds versus trying to do too much. And I think to me personally, he only probably made like two mistakes, and those were the two sacks. I felt like he could have climbed the ladder in the pocket when Tom Furness came on a counter play action that we did. And then when we was in the red zone and he had Neville on the spot route and he tried to reverse pivot and got sacked. I thought that was his only two mistakes. And if that's the two things I could be nitpicky about, he played an awesome game. He threw some very good balls, was very smart and efficient. And he's sliding. He must've been looking at Hard Knocks because he's sliding. And I like that.
Yeah, every time I hear that, I think I've been listening to a lot of Commanders talking and them just yelling at Jaden Daniels to just slide, get down because he's taking way too many hits with that frame. Yeah, I think on that, you're talking about that 1 sack in the red zone. I think everyone in the stadium probably saw Neville was open on that play except for him. And I don't even know, maybe he did see him open or maybe he saw something else down on the field. I don't know, but it looked like he missed him there and then he kind of started scrambling around and then that's when you get a 20-yard sack. And I think, the other one too, the guy for Richmond, he's actually a pretty good player, Jeremiah Grant, that had that sack, but he just bulldozed Ty Furniss straight back into him. But yeah, I think overall, like he was making the easy plays, but he's also still showing that he can make the big plays because a lot of what they talked about in camp is you don't always have to look for the big plays. And it looked like he found a nice balance of both. He's making good completions underneath. He had a couple screen passes, on the play with Jack Greasy. Everyone, some people thought it was a wheel route. He actually was just running out into the flat and then saw Calandria scramble. And that's just good awareness right now, right there. And I think players are going to be aware of that because they know Calandria can run. And I was actually kind of impressed with Des Kitchings and the play calling and surprised a little bit because last year they seemed pretty hesitant at first to let him run and call design runs for him. They called the quarterback draw. I mean, more than a couple times and it worked throughout the game. And he's really good. And I think about reading where to run the ball. And I think that kind of showed. I mean, I don't know how the exact number here, but he finished with 49 pass rushing yard or rushing yards, but he had a lot more than that. It was just the
He had
sacks
like
that kind of
76 before the sacks, I think.
76 without the sacks. Yeah. I mean, because he was up there. He was giving Kobe a run for his money before, Kobe got real loose after the break. But yeah, I think so far pretty good. And it's probably just 2 sacks. And I think that's really all Tony Elliott saw after the game, when we interviewed him is just, got to be smarter on those 2 sacks. And other than that, I think it's going to be interesting as we get into ACC play. A friend of mine asked me before the game, just because, the first week of ACC play has been kind of up and down and some guys at the quarterback position have major question marks. Where do you see Calandria right now in the ACC?
I think he's in the top tier of
Yeah.
the upper echelon of our conference. I think we have one of the better quarterbacks in all the conference, to be
He
honest
asked me,
with you.
is top five like safe to say? And I was
Yeah,
like,
easily.
I think it's definitely like it can be discussed. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say he's top five right now. I know people want to see him play against someone that's not Richmond and but I think he saw week one. I mean, obviously the guy at UNC, he's out for the year now, so that's an injury loss for him. Kyren Drones looked He really struggled throwing the ball down the field in that first game. He's obviously dynamic running the ball, and they have good playmakers around him. But every pass down the field looked like he struggled. DJ Uiagalelei, he struggled in their first game. So some guys around the ACC haven't looked their best. So it's not crazy to think he's up there. Obviously, I think Cam Ward at Miami is probably the top guy right now. He looked amazing in week one. Looking at this offense, and I wrote about it in the last article for the Saber, is about the explosive plays. They had 12 big plays in total against Richmond, which is not a crazy number when compared to some other bigger games, but they really kind of let the foot off the gas pedal in the second half. So they could have probably had a lot more if they wasn't for the rain delay. And so I just, what did you think of the overall big play nature of this offense?
I mean, I like the. I mean, when you can be balanced, well, so coach always talk about complementary football, but when you can establish line of scrimmage and you can run the football and run the football well, like they really control the line of scrimmage, hat on the hat, our backs were very patient, show great vision. So when you can establish the line of scrimmage, now you bring one safety down. Now you have the opportunity to hit big plays. And it's all about finishing the big plays because last year we'll have guys open, we'll overthrow it, or we just won't get, won't have time. So, like you said, you talk about Des Kitchens. The one thing I like watching the film that he did this game that I hadn't seen since he's been offensive coordinator, RPO with the wide receiver as an option. So identifying that, hey, the corner's 8 yards off of Malachi Fields. We're gonna pop it to him. That's an option. So Malachi receiver, I mean, a DB 8 yards off. And if people play college football 25, you got the RPO with the receiver screen. We just call it a smoke route where you just turn and show your numbers to the quarterback and he just pop it to you. And nobody wants to tackle Malachi Fields one on, not a corner.
No.
When tackle, he know he run like a grown man. So incorporating that, but that isn't available if you don't have the ability to run the football consistently.
Yeah,
so, and that was kudos to the guys up front because they set the table for us.
Oh, absolutely. We'll talk about them some more in a second. But that was kind of the interesting thing is, you know, 12 explosive plays, seven of them were in the run game. Had Anthony Calandra, the couple big runs, Kobe Pace. Mm-hmm. Really nice to see Xavier Brown back out there. He just gives you such a change of pace to Kobe Pace, you know, no pun intended there. But it was nice to see kind of that backfield as a whole. What did you make of Kobe? I know he's kind of coming into the season. You know, last year he shared a lot of the time with Mike Collins and Paris Jones. Now it's kind of he's the lead dog, as Tony Elliott said in the post game. What did you make of what he was able to do out there in the run game?
He's special, man. Like, his ability to see the entire field and just be patient, like have the Le'Veon Bell-esque type of patience and he could jump cut. So that's dynamic in itself. It was a play in the second half. Well, not the second half, but we came out of the rain delay and we're running inside zone read, but the end dropped. And so it must've been just a give because Calandra, if it was a read, he would have pulled it, but he gave it to Kobe. The end crashes down. He jump cut back towards where Calandra is at. And then he broke in years past, a running back would have got either tackled or they would just force the run to the play call side, yeah. You know? So his ability to be dynamic and cut against the grain is going to cause a lot of opposing defenders, especially defensive ends, to be slow. So that allows us to get a push up to the second level. So that's the dynamic he brings. Then we got Greasy. He just, first of all, they need to go ahead and give him a scholarship. You know, like that's how good that kid is. So
yeah, we were kind of surprised that he still doesn't have one.
Yeah, I like what he brings to the table. Then Xavier, you won't find too many running backs faster than him. So he almost got one. The kid clipped him up when he had a nice cutback and he just barely got his foot. But it's good to see just the dynamic of the guys in the backfield. But Kobe is the guy that can do everything. Because in the passing game, if you ISO him versus a linebacker, I'm going with five every time.
Yeah. No, he looked great. And that was kind of the center of my article is kind of outside of Calandra. Obviously, he's the quarterback. You know, Pace is creating a lot of big plays out there. He was getting those 10-yard chunks. And, you know, last year, I was kind of surprised looking back how many carries he had last year. But it just everything was, you know, 2 yards in a cloud of dust. And this year, he's finding those lanes. He looks the best. And I asked him, he said he feels the best of his career. Even going back to his, you know, the 1 year at Clemson, I guess it was his sophomore year where he actually played really well when he was sharing the backfield with Will Shipley. But he looks really good. And just if they can get Greasy and Brown and eventually Noah Vaughn, because the way the staff talks about Noah Vaughn, they really like him. And so if he gets back healthy, that's a good amount of backs that can also spell him and keep him fresh and healthy as they kind of go on throughout the season. Looking at the offensive line play, like we mentioned earlier, kind of the big news before the game, Mikael Boley still battling that high ankle sprain, and they really want to get him in a healthy place because he battled through injuries all last season. And so Jack Whitmer filled in there. And I don't know if a lot of people remember, he was a tight end when they brought him in, and he's kind of been pushed into this position at tackle. And I think what I saw is that he was one of the higher graded guys on PFF. Pretty good for your first start out there in a college football game.
Yeah, especially when you're the blind side guy. If I'm not mistaken. So he the money tackle. And I thought he did well, man. It's like you could do a lot of things to alleviate the stress for a guy right there. So, you know, move the pocket, let him come downhill a couple of times, establish the run game so he get a feel. And don't always try to create long developing plays when you call it in. So, again, man, I think Dez called a great game. We executed. And those front fives, man, like people have been getting on them for the years. And it's warranted. But when they do well, we got to praise them just as much as we did when we criticized them. And they did a really good job Saturday night.
And it's also good to see when one of your guys goes down, especially a guy as good as Mikael Boley can be, that you have the depth to step up and kind of hold that. Because that's kind of been another problem is that they have been just rotating out parts and everyone's injured all the time. And so it's been inconsistent. But it's nice that they, you know, they now have five guys that have some experience with each other. So when one guy comes in, it's not as big as a a learning gap, I guess, and they can kind of keep on rolling. So we'll see. And, you know, they expect to get Mikhail Boley back soon. It's kind of a day-to-day situation. That's what Tony Elliott said after the Richmond game. All right, overall offensive grade, I guess we won't go any A pluses. We'll just do a normal normal grading scale. I know you have some grading experience in your past. So what would you give the offense for this first week?
497 yards, a total offense. Very balanced. You would like, you know, to be able to be perfect in the red zone, having four touchdowns. I think it was two or four in the red zone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I give us an A. I mean, we have some drops. Like, the most explosive playmaker we have had a rough game.
Yes.
I'm telling you, man, that joke is special, man. I can't wait for Chris Tyree just go ahead and just, you know, do what he do.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought him up because it was an interesting game for him. He was my player to watch going into the game. And so I gave Chris the point on that because he had Malachi Fields and I had Chris Tyree. And, you know, we know how that one went. But yeah, he dropped a couple balls. He had the weird, I guess, the push pass where he dropped that one where, you know, they looked at it to see if it was a fumble. They wouldn't kick to him the whole game. You know, Xavier Brown actually looked really good on one of those kick returns. Yeah. I know he dropped the ball at first, but maybe that helped him kind
that
of
does. It does. See sometimes.
Does it help? Okay.
Yeah.
You would know. You tell me, how does that help?
If it's a kick like that. Yeah. If it's a short kick. So if you're, so that was coming out of that was coming out of the rain delay.
Yes.
So the foot in his bad. So they kind of pooched it. When you drop it and it's short, guys converge too quickly out of their lanes. So when you converge that quick and you pick it up and you take off, you can actually outflank them now because they crash, they squeeze too much, you know. And you can hear, I can hear coaches, especially team coaches, now squeeze to the ball. Whoa, whoa, not that far up. Because your natural instinct is when you see the ball hit the ground, let's go recover it. So you accelerate. So that's the only time it's dangerous for the kicking team when the ball hits the ground, when it's like the coffin kick. It's almost like we did when we played. I don't hate to bring this back. When we play NC State, we kind of kicked it to the sideline.
Yep.
And the guy outflanked this guy all the way back out because the guys to the left, they were squeezing too much. They overcompensated because they think they can get up the field too much and create a lane. So you kind of just kind of slow down and keep them in front of you. Then if they bounce it, now you just take the angle and catch them. So that's how it works out sometimes.
Yeah, what a play that was too.
Yes, was.
I thought that might be the case. They never put me back at kick return in high school. You know, I just didn't have the wheels, didn't have the vision. I could catch the ball, but I couldn't do much else than that. But yeah, I would probably go A- just because of the missed opportunities in the red zone. And you know, against Richmond, I think they were a better team than some people give them credit for. But I would have liked to see them kind of capitalize a little bit more. I thought when Musket went in that maybe they would score another touchdown or get another field goal or something just on the board. Cause he had the whole fourth quarter pretty much when he came in, but really kind of just took the foot off the gas pedal. They didn't put up 70 plus like Ole Miss or someone like that. Some of those SEC scores from this past weekend. So I think, you know, the A-, that's a good range for their first game. We'll see what they can do going an ACC play. All right, defensive side of the ball now. Obviously, a lot of questions for this unit coming into the year. Looking at kind of what they did. Good to see just Antonio Clary back there. I think that's one of the big stories of the game. He had eight tackles. Jonas Sanker also had eight tackles. Just that duo back there, it's kind of just a security blanket for this defense that you have so much experience back there and two guys that can really make a lot of plays.
Yeah, especially with Thomas, too. So you got Corey Thomas Jr., who's a safety by trade. It was times where Corey was the deep safety. So you allow Jonas to come up or you allow Clary to come up. The thing about Jonas and Antonio is both of those guys can cover. So they could be interchangeable. And both of them would knock your mouthpiece off, too. I mean,
they saw it a couple times,
Yeah, the first play of the game, Antonio came up. So they ran a zone, and he has – the B gap is huge, and it's just Antonio in that big back. And he fits him. Wow! First play of the game. I'm just like, back. So now you got zero, because we know 20 could do that. Everybody know Jonas Sanker could come up and fit you up. But now you have a mirror image of him. Who's his running mate that's fitting you up? And Corey calls the fumble when they caught the tunnel screen. Somebody depleted DeGenero first, and then Corey comes in and gets the ball out by just putting his face on the football. So you got three very high contact safeties. So that helps in the run game. So I'm excited about Zebra and 20 back there together.
Yeah, that's definitely the strength of this defense at this point. Just those guys, and Jonas talked about it a little bit before this season, just because him and Antonio have been playing with each other so long, they can kind of just switch and flop around. You know, they can play either position and kind of move around, and they know what they're doing out there. So I know that's probably huge for Rudd, and he can do with his defense, just to be like, y'all got it. Y'all can flip around and kind of confuse the offense a little bit. I'm going to admit, I didn't see Jonas leading the team in tackles again this year. So I predicted before the season that it'd be Cam Robinson. So far through week one, I don't know. Just because we were thinking, well, I don't know if you want your safety to be your leading tackler all the time. I know Quinn Blandon did it to great effect when he was there, and Jonas was great last season. But you know, you kind of want someone close to the box because you're hoping, you know, they're not getting too far down the field. But those guys were in the box making plays in the backfield.
Yeah, so Jonas is going to come down the boundary a lot, so he's almost like an extra linebacker because he's the overhang. But like you said, like somebody like Cam will probably end up leading us a tackle. Even when Quinn was getting a lot of tackles, then Micah jumped out and started leading the tackle. But we also got to realize, like, the safety is the unaccounted for defender. So that's more speaking to how special. Like, now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes it's because teams are getting to the second level. But, Jonas Antonio, a lot of their tackles was, like, within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage. They was out up there thumping. Like, they were hitting out there, man. And I seen Jonas one time get cracked by the receiver, just throw him, and then just grab the back and pull him down in one movement. It's like, you can't teach that. That's just heart and hustle, you know? But yeah, man, I could see Cam still leading us in tackles, but it's going to be tough because both of those guys come up fast.
I know. He's going to be standing there waiting for the guy to come to him, and 20 years here is going to flash by.
They'll do a Wally Rainer. Wally Rainer was known. Shout out to Wally. Wally was still point decks and them tackles quick because he was like a missile. Let me get that tackle.
Probably the biggest thing just fans were talking about after the game defensively is still the lack of a pass rush. Only got one sack. That was Ben Smiley and Jason Hammond combined. Real quick about Ben Smiley, because you know, coming into the week, you know, coach said, you know, he was injured during camp, didn't know if he was going to play. So that's why he wasn't on the too deep, the depth chart. He came out there, only played a couple plays, but really kind of stood out to me. You know, he had the sack, also had another tackle in the backfield. He had four tackles overall, but he kind of stood out in his moments. But overall, what did you think of the pass rush? I know Coach Elliott kind of talked about, too, you know, the Kyle Wickersham quarterback for Richmond, big guy. And they were trying to get the ball out quick. So not your ideal conditions to get a lot of pass rush and get sacks. And plus in the second half, it was raining. So you're going to run the ball a little bit more in those conditions. But overall, your thoughts on the pass rush after that?
Yeah, so the box score is going to show that we had one sack. You look at last year, we had more games played than sacks. So, of course, that's going to be a concern. It really is. But when you look at the film, so if you break down Richmond and their quarterback, what he did last year, he had games where he ran the ball 20 times. Then you see him in person and you see the offense. He wants to run the ball. So on my podcast, I said, treat him like he's Steph Curry with the basketball. Steph Curry says the ball is a grenade. I want to get the grenade out of my hand. So what's the best thing to do to him? Let's converge on him. We're going to send four. We're going to drop. Can you beat us throwing? And we know you don't want to keep the ball in your hands. Like, he completes over 70% of his passes because he'll take the quick. If he feels a little pressure, he'll take the quick. So we maybe sent more than four guys, I want to say like three or four times. And when we did that, that's when you saw the quick three, like the third downs where he got the ball out and people was getting hit. That's when we sent pressure at them. Other than that, we'll send the backer and we'll drop it in. So we'll send the backer, drop the end to play spy and flush him one way. So we converged on him, but we didn't sack him. And then they went max pro sometimes. They had six on our four, or they had seven on our four. So granted, if they kept, they got their five and they keep the tight end, that's five. I mean, that's six. Sometimes they keep the tight end and the running back in. So that was 7-on-4. So we just started mirroring and trying to get our hands up. You saw we batted the ball down a couple of times. They did have a good drive right before the rain delay when we started shuffling guys in. and they showed what they wanted to do to us. But we did a good job of just compressing the line of scrimmage, making him move, making him think, and be a passer. If they would have brought in the guy he was in competition with, we would probably have brought in a lot of pressure because he wasn't known to run.
Yeah, this guy, I think he had negative rushing yards last season.
Yeah, he had six touchdown passes in his first game starting. So we would have came at him. Now, in this game versus Wake, you're going to have to bring pressure. Like, you can't allow that guy to just sit back and try to find – because they have receivers that are really good. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So this game would be a real barometer if we get a pass rush.
You got to be careful, too, with that slow mesh. I mean, as long as they hold it. I'm going to have Connor O'Neill that covers Wake for Rivals on here later this week. So we'll talk a lot more about how that matchup looks. I think also with Wickersham, you mentioned, 13 of 22, 110 yards, 59 completion percentage. Like, that's pretty good. Like, if he's trying to get the ball out quickly, like, he was getting some short completions, but not a ton of them. And I think they really kept things in front of them the whole time. It wasn't like he was sitting back and getting to launch the ball downfield. No, it was like quick passes, a lot of pass breakup opportunities. The best one was probably, I think it was first or second drive of the game. I saw Cam Butler dropping back into coverage. He got a paw on the ball. It was a different look. And that's another reason. It's like, if Butler's dropping back, obviously you're not going to have as great of a pass rush because he's your best pass rusher and he's dropping back into coverage. And so that kind of speaks to what you're talking about with, all right, let's get, three, four guys rushing the quarterback, but let's drop back and make sure, they're not just nickel and diming us down the field. Cause we know this guy's going to get the ball out in like a second anyway.
Yeah. And think of it like this. If I told you Virginia's defense only gives up 110 yards passing the game, you like, oh, day.
Yeah, that's great. And for a while, they were under 100. So
yeah,
you felt pretty good about it. Is there anyone else that stood out to you? I know it's not a lot of noteworthy performances defensively, but anyone else that kind of stood out to you?
I mean, so as much as we didn't get a pass for us, when you look at the tackle totals, our D linemen have majority of our tackles. That means they were controlling the line of scrimmage, getting off of blocks. Because this isn't our D lineman chasing running backs down 5 and 6 yards down the field. This is engaging, getting penetration, discarding, tackling at the line of scrimmage. Like, you got, I think Hammond had four tackles. Like, you had a lot of different D linemen with 3 and 4 tackles. Like, so that's why when folks were like, man, we got to get a pass rush, I was like, no, I get it. Because last year makes you panic. If we had the 30 sack year and then this game, we wouldn't worry about it. But I understand why our fans was like, yo, we got to get a pass rush. We only had one sack. And I'm just like, I get you. But they controlled the line of scrimmage. Just, we were very vanilla. But I just like how Hammond and Carter just controlled the A-gaps. Like, that's not going to show up in the stat sheet. But even when it was passing downs, like, you get a push to where you can't climb the pocket, because that's the most dangerous, when the quarterback could come forward to slide, climb the pocket. And we wasn't on display that much this game. Our ability to play man to man, because last year we had to play a lot of zone. So Kempton Shine, Jam, Dre Walk, like those guys' ability to play man to man. So you had to come off that first read.
Yeah, I liked Kempton Shine ever since the spring, and I saw he played really well in that spring game. And he looks like a guy that is just a pure man to man cover guy, and he'll try to lock you down the whole game, and he did a really good job. You mentioned the defensive tackles. After Clary and Sanker, it is Ben Smiley, Anthony Britton, Jameer Carter, Jason Hammond with four tackles, all of them. Those are the big guys on the team. Like, it's a lot of weight up front, and they looked good and they played well up front. So overall defensive grade now, where would you go for the defense?
I'll probably go just B+, just because we didn't get that many sacks. I'll give him a B+, because to me that's safe.
I think you put a B on the report card, and mom's not going to ask you any questions when you get home. It's like, that's
and we
fine.
Gave up 147 yards rushing, so that's not good. Like, we won, and I know a lot of that may have came late, but play to the standard. No matter what group is in there, play to the standard. That's why I like that when they got that long run, Dre Walker hustle, got the tackle, we didn't let them score. That's playing to the standard, like Coach said. So I get them a B+, because I don't, as much as I'm bragging about 110, last year we gave up 180 yards rushing the game. 147. That's, well, Wake Forest is a little worse because North Carolina A&T ran for more yards than that, but still, that's still not good.
Yeah. No, it and it's hard. Again, you mentioned it. It's so hard to kind of grade this game because, you know, before the rain delay and after the rain delay just seemed like two different games. And you know, the offense for Virginia came out. They scored twice, like pretty quickly right away. And then it was, you know, kind of after that, it just kind of tailored off. And that's kind of the same way defense, you know, Richmond kind of had a little bit of success, but they didn't, they never scored another touchdown. So
rain delay probably helped us this year because remember they just scored and then had the rain delay. Like versus JMU, we had the momentum and it sucked it out of us. So it was like payback. Like,
you're dumping some water on that fire. They're trying to get cooking over there. All right. Who's on podcast player of the game? I mentioned the results earlier. Anthony Calangio running away with this one. I wanted to get your thoughts just on some of the other guys I put in there. So Calandria had 74% of the vote. I had Kobe Pace in there. He only got 4%. Malachi Fields, 20%. And I put Antonio Clary just to get a defense guy in there at 2%, just because I think he's a really valuable piece to this defense. Yeah. Thoughts on those four? Does that seem like the right four? And anyone else you throw in there?
No, I think that's dope. Shout out to Malachi, man. The fact that he was always last year, over 800 yards. And this is his first ever 100-yard game.
Crazy, right? I couldn't believe that stat. Like, going into the season, I knew that because I was going through his stats and writing some articles about him. And I was like, no. He had to have once last year gotten over 100 yards.
He was, like, fifth in average, too, in the ACC. Yeah. So, it's like, dang.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think there was, like, the Boston College game up there. He had, like, 80 yards in the first half and then just didn't get in the second half. So it was great to see, oh my gosh, that pass. I was trying to sit there and be like, how do I communicate what just happened on this play? Like I just went like, geez.
That was ridiculous, man. Fully airborne. Like, that's tough as a receiver to make it. So it was raining. The ball was a little heavier. He didn't have any
exactly.
And he caught it and he turned. So he kept it up. So he hit the ground and he controlled it up here to where it didn't move at all. So that was a phenomenal catch. That was just a great execution on all sides. Look, because one thing about Calandria, he's going to give you a chance. Like his touchdown pass to Terrell Harris, if people go back and see the game, I mean, see the play from the beginning, when he throws it, Terrell isn't even – so he's still 2 yards away from the DB as far as trying to eat up his cushion and the ball's in the air. And he avoided some dude trying to hit him in the knee. Like I said on the podcast, I was like, what? The defender didn't trip. He just tried to hit AC in his knees.
Yeah.
It was like, and he avoided that. So AC threw the ball early, avoided the hit. And the DB's looking up in the air like, oh, I got me one because Trell's still in front of him to where he's running towards him. And Trell makes an adjustment and just said, you know, like pushes the kid like, move, let me get this.
Yeah. So. I think safe to say, though, I think the fans got it right. Anthony Calandria kind of running away with this one. Just what he did early on just to kind of jumpstart the whole day. It was pretty good to see.
They call him Monticello Manziel, I think.
Monticello Manziel.
Yeah.
It's so funny because all last year, all I could see was, you know, I know he never did it, but all I could see was the money sign in my head. He got it this year. It was funny because Johnny Manziel was on College Game Day yesterday, so that's what I watched before I came and saw that. I need to ask him sometime just if he watched him as a kid growing up and like if that's where he got some of it. But it reminds me so much of him on the field, just kind of the excitement that he can bring on any given play.
You know what I like about him though, what I like about when he's not on the field, what I've learned, like if you and you was around him last year, you know his temperament. For all the fans, when the cameras are on, it's so hard for him not to show personality because everybody's giving him a hard time about tech.
Yeah.
So he's going to be very vanilla anytime the camera's on him. He's going to be like, yeah. But it's eating him up because he's so animated, has so much personality that when he finally gets on the field, he can let it out.
It's a playground. Yeah.
He's like the biggest kid ever. So when he said what he said about tech, he wasn't being malicious. That's just him having fun, the pageantry of the game. But, you know, fans can ruin things because they take it so personal. And they want to jab you. Like, oh, we proved you wrong. But it's like, dude, like, he's just having fun. Like, he didn't mean no ill will to them. And yes, they were hitting him late. He was still getting up, still smiling, still having fun. But that's what I love about him, man. He loves to play football. He really loves it.
That's basically the answer he'll give you too. He just loves to play football. And it's so funny you mentioned the tech comms. We talked about it last week because of, you know, kind of how Calandria is kind of chosen to go about the media this year, you know, being a little more reserved, kind of learning some lessons from last year. And we're like, I mean, the funny thing is, like, fans loved it at the time. On the Virginia side, obviously, and if it had worked, if they had gone out and won that game somehow, there would have been
be
a statue.
Namath.
They'd be building a statue outside the stadium at like as soon as the game ended.
Like anytime you could call your shot, man, you looked at as the most confident. Dare, like, it's like you're daring to be great, but if you fail, people feel like you need to be humbled. It's like, wait a minute, it's not. You do know it's a game. I'm like having fun, like I'm going to keep talking because I believe in my preparation. I believe in my abilities. I am thankful that I'm here, but that doesn't mean I have to be silent. Like, I could be loud and humble because when I lose, I could still praise what the opponent did. I'm going to show them their respect. Like, hey, man, you got the best of me today. Show up tomorrow. Beat me again. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So people are like, oh, he got humbled. He got humbled. It's like, nah, he just lost. And you can say what you want to say, but don't say he got humbled. Like, he's not a nasty dude. He's not selfish like that.
He doesn't seem humbled. he seems just fine on his own. And I'll call my shot. I don't think it's the last time he'll call his shot at some point. Maybe not be this year, but you know, he's got some more time in college left. But Ahmad, I just want to thank you so much. I want to say, literally, when I started this, the first person I was like, I got to get on here is Ahmad Hawkins, the Ball Hawk. Just all the times that we've talked over the years, you were like the pod father of UVA football. Oh, so I was like, I got to get the Ball Hawk on here, especially with what you're doing this year. And we're so happy to see you kind of be up in the box and get that opportunity, you know, keep John Freeman on target, on task.
Man, that's the man right there, man.
That is the man.
So here's the thing. I appreciate you, Damon, like with CBS, like being on you guys' shows on CBS 19, like over the years, and you know, even with Jerry Miller, he was like NBC 29, and then Jay James on WINA, my dog. So Chris kickstarted my career, Chris Wright.
Yeah.
Writing, and that was like writing. I wasn't even talking, but just always making sure I understand like my grassroots and who was there for me. So that's why when you sent me the text, I was like, yeah, come on, we'll work a time out. Like, you my guy. So it's just one of the things where I'm thankful for the folks who helped me, you know, sharpen my knife and get to where I want to get to. And I'm so thankful for it. So anytime I'm on the radio, I'm having fun. I'm loving it. Anytime I could be a guest on your show, I love it because I just love talking about sports and the university and trying to put it in a positive light and just trying to help fans just understand the game that much better. In a sense of understanding like how we see the game. Because over the years, I had to grow and understand how fans see the game and not take it personal and just say, mm-hmm. wait a minute, let me be respectful of their opinion. You understand why they feel that way and see if I could bridge both sides and like, all right, this is how we see it. So hopefully when you watch the game, now your lens is a little different. And then when I call the game, I can interpret the game to where you understand it. Because I know what you saw and how you feel. Let me talk you off the ledge. And if you're on the ledge, you're right, but I don't want you to jump. I just want you to stay right there until we can really get down. So, I mean, just over the years, just watching you and watching guys that paved the way before me is like my way of just making sure I give back and understand, like, I appreciate what you done for me over the years. So don't ever think that just because I'm in these other roles, that's like, man, Hulk might not come on. It's like, no, Hulk for you, yes. See, other people I may not know, it's like, I don't know. I may not feel too safe what they trying to do. But, yeah, man, I appreciate you, and I love what you're doing right now.
Well, we're definitely going to have to hook you up down the road again. We'll get you back on here. But just want to say thanks again for coming on. And that is the latest edition of the Who's On podcast. Remember to go find us on Apple and Spotify and as well on thesaber.com. And sometimes you can even see a little ball hawk. Maybe a petty hawk jump into the message board, the comment section over there. We'll see. We'll see what the football season has to hold. But Ahmad, thanks again for coming on, and we will catch y'all later in the week.
Appreciate you, man. Go Hoos.